Shadow Falls Badlands. The story so far. After being imprisoned for several days, Galen is finally released from the pillory, only to be dragged into the middle of a circle and tied to a whipping post. There, the hooded woman known as Nana flogs him in front of her followers. But when she stops, she withdraws something from her pocket and shows it to Galen. To his horror, it is a duplicate of the cursed eye he had taken from the gypsy crone. And in this eye, he sees the same terrible vision of the impending war between heaven and hell. It's only when Nana pulls the eye away that she reveals where it came from. The skull of her father, William Lawton. The man she claims is Galen's father, back in a previous life, when Galen was her brother Thomas. Chapter 19.
"I don't believe you," screamed Galen's mind. He looked up into Nana's face, searching with every hope on earth that this news wasn't possible. His mind ran through any memory, any single thought his brain could muster, to find some kind of recollection of her, of a sister, of a family. But there was nothing, not even a glimmer. He'd been lied to by countless charlatans, con men and crooks looking to rook him. Men and women like the gypsy crone who would mislead their own mothers if it meant getting what they wanted. He ducked their oily advances time and again based upon his intuition. However, it was impossible for Galen to admit that there wasn't a part of him hidden deep down inside his soul that believed her.
"It's true," Nana told him. "You are my brother, and you left us."
She held the petrified eye of William Lawton up to Galen's face.
"You have witnessed that which our father saw. Death, destruction for many, the most devastating war this world has ever seen. It is coming, and your arrival can only mean a great many wheels are in motion."
"If I'm your departed brother," Galen said, "then why do you imprison me? Why do you whip me as if I am your mortal enemy?"
"Because, dear Thomas," she said, "in whatever form you inhabit currently, you do not represent my brother. You may have been him at one time, but now, you are much more dangerous."
"How am I a danger?" Galen croaked.
"Because there is absolutely no chance that Brother Miles does not know about you being alive and you being here. What he intends to use you for is most likely something which I and the rest of the mages should fear, because your sudden arrival here means that it is started again."
"He doesn't know," the pockmarked-faced man said, and Galen's inner reaction to hearing the man's voice was of anger. If there was any way out of this, he promised he would kill the bastard.
"Ah, I sense rage," Nana said, holding out her hand, palm facing toward Galen. "That is a good thing, but I do fear the part of you that is any use to me is too far buried inside the man who has become nothing but a killer."
Momentarily, she lowered the whip, her hand relaxing.
"I know where you are headed. It's calling to you. What do you know about the town of Shadow Falls?" she asked.
"Shadow Falls," he responded, his mind drifting. That had to be it, he thought. Galen realized Nana's utterance had been the first time he had ever heard the name of the place he'd seen so clearly in his mind all these many weeks.
"What can you tell me?"
he finally inquired. He had been walking for close to an hour, carrying Allison in his arms. Miles cursed the souls of those who made this happen. Following several feet behind him was Elsabeth, the 7-year-old daughter of one of the other families who had come aboard the Majestic,
along with himself and Allison. She was the only other survivor of the attack.
Why?
She cried out as she sobbed. Elizabeth was inconsolable. Her parents had been eviscerated in front of her, torn apart before her very eyes. It had taken Miles hours of begging to get Elizabeth to leave the scene of the massacre. She had refused, clutching hopelessly to her mother's severed torso, clinging to her bosom as if she were just an infant. Finally, he convinced Elizabeth to leave. When he told her, he was going without her, and she would be forced to stay here all night, all alone. Finally, she agreed, and almost immediately he regretted his choice to save her life. And now, with the nonstop crying, Miles had begun to wish the predators had taken her as well, for he was afraid she would upset baby Allison.
How much further?
Whined Elizabeth as Miles continued to trudge west in the path of the setting sun.
I don't know, he grumbled. Speak up,
mewed Elizabeth.
I can't hear. I said I don't bloody well know!
He turned and screamed. The sudden shriek of his voice caused Allison to begin wailing and scared Elizabeth enough to make her burst out into a brand new salvo of tears.
Now look what you've done!
Shouted Miles as he put Allison down and tried to get her to stop bawling.
Shh, shh, there, there,
he whispered into his sister's face.
Don't cry. I'm sorry.
Elizabeth sobbed. Miles looked up at her with her red puffy eyes from crying all day. He thought of how terrified she must have been while the attacking beast circled her parents' wagon and dragged them out with their dripping fangs. And as he gazed at Elizabeth's face, he realized there had been a terrible mistake. Her survival of the attack should not have happened. The voice in his head told him, "It's wrong." She had no part in what was to come, and would only stand in the way. Allison began to bawl louder, and Miles started to wonder how he was going to feed her.
I want to go home,
Elizabeth cried out.
I don't want to go any further.
She plopped down on the ground and sat there crying. It's wrong, the voice told him. She doesn't belong here, in our house, in our name. It's going to be okay, Miles told Elizabeth as he approached her. I promise. The reach of his hands across her neck surprised Elizabeth, but he had caught her in between sobs, so there was no air in her lungs for her to cry out. He pushed her onto the ground, squeezing tighter. Elizabeth's mouth gaped like that of a dying fish. Her arms flailed wildly as her brain was running out of oxygen. All around him, the sounds of the woods faded away into silence. Using his thumbs, Miles applied pressure on her windpipe, feeling it crush under his fingers. Her small body bucked once, then again. And afterwards, Miles could feel Elizabeth fading away. Even as her movement stopped and her gaze glassed over in a frozen stare, he held onto her neck for several more minutes until he was certain she was dead. Very good, the voice in his head told him. Very good indeed. And with a whoosh, the sound all around him rushed back in like a crashing tide, and Allison's brain tears cut through the air like a blade. Miles turned to her. The small bundle of life, helpless in this world. She would be his responsibility, and he resented it. There was already too much to do without the burden of a baby to deal with. He looked down at his hands, the same ones he had just used to kill the only other person left from the Majestic, other than himself and his sister. His hands were rock steady, he was prepared to use them for whatever was needed to accomplish his intended goals. And with his hands, he picked up baby Allison and cradled her against his chest.
There,
he said, and slowly rocked her until she fell back into a slumber. Once he was sure she was sleeping, Miles gently put her down on the ground. He dragged Elsabeth away and covered her body up with sticks and leaves, then went back for his sleeping sister. And as he picked up Allison once again and stroked her sleeping face, he heard footfalls coming toward him in the woods from the same direction he'd just come from near where he'd taken Elsabeth's body. He turned to see them emerge from the woods toward him, a young man holding hands with a young woman, their clothes simple and plain. To Miles, they looked like farmers. And as they looked up, they seemed as surprised to see him as he was to see them, and they both exclaimed out loud in a language he didn't understand. French, Miles thought.
Comment allez-vous?
The young woman asked, her voice sounding full of concern. Miles shook his head and, as if on cue, began bawling. His crying startled baby Allison because she began bawling as well.
I don't understand you,
Miles sobbed through his very convincing crocodile tears.
Anglais,
the young Frenchman said to the girl, motioning toward Miles.
Oui,
she responded, then whispered something to him, to which he nodded before swiftly heading back into the thick woods. The French girl then held out her hand to Miles. The settlement had been no more than an hour's walk, and when baby Allison had grown heavy, the French girl took her and carried her in her arms, all the while singing softly, in a hushed and soothing voice. Once they arrived, the French girl gave Allison back to Miles.
Vous arrêtez,
she told him, motioning with her palm out for him to wait. They stood outside what Miles could tell was obviously some kind of a church. Moments after going inside, she came back out with a man. The familiar collar around his neck identified him as a man of the cloth.
I'm Father Henri,
he said to Miles in reasonably clear English. Miles had already anticipated his next move. He wrapped his arms around Father Henri's neck and burst into tears.
They came from the woods and killed everybody,
he sobbed. And judging from Father Henri's horror-stricken face, the priest completely understood the significance of it. Father Henri took the children inside the humble wooden church, and as Miles entered, he saw over his shoulder how the French boy had arrived, and how he seemed to pretend not to notice the French girl was there also.
You two have a secret, Miles thought. Very interesting.
Within minutes, other women from the settlement had arrived at the church, bringing food and blankets for the children, hovering over Miles and Allison with bowls of warm soup, fresh bread, and milk. Chattering away incessantly in French, they stroked his hair, and thankfully, due to the language barrier, Miles was spared from having to repeat the lie time and again. Father Henri was the only one Miles could find who was conversant in English. It was much later, in the church's one-windowed back room, as the good priest was tucking Miles into a fresh straw bed, that he explained.
I attended seminary in England, he explained. I have been lucky in my lifetime to see many beautiful places. Africa, the Far East. I came here to this world because I was called by a higher purpose. Maybe you and your sister were too.
He nodded toward Allison, who slept soundly in a wooden box that had been fashioned into a crib Father Henri patted Miles's head and gave the kind of smile, one full of solace, that only a priest could give. He rose, taking the room's one candle with him, but paused before leaving to look back.
Although it may not seem so now, maybe fate has big plans for you.
And as Father Henri shut the door, Miles got up and tiptoed across the mostly darkened room to the makeshift crib where Allison was sleeping. He reached down with both hands and pulled the blanket up to her neck, and his touch, a familiar one for a change, must have woken her up. Her eyes opened to look at Miles, and she cooed softly as he stroked her cheek with his finger. From his own pocket came a kerchief, one monogrammed with his father's initials. He unfolded the small bundle to reveal the eyeballs that had, until recently, belonged to his father, the ones that he personally removed. Delicately, he picked up one of the still sticky orbs between his thumb and forefinger and held it up to his sleeping sister.
"What do you see, Allison? What do you see?" he quietly asked. "Because if the visions within are the same things that Father saw, I'm afraid the world will soon be coming to a most difficult and violent end. And I believe you and I will play some kind of part in allowing it to happen."
And that is Chapter 19 of Shadow Falls Badlands. What do the mages have to fear from Galen Altos and from Miles Lawton? And for that matter, how does Miles intend to use his newfound hosts? The answers are all drawing closer, so make sure you tune in to the next episode of Shadow Falls Badlands. And bring your friends along, too. Tell them to go to shadowfalls.podshow.com. Send me your questions, comments, and feedback to shadowfalls@podshowla.com. And once again, big thanks to Monk for the closing theme for Part 3 of Shadow Falls Badlands. This is I Am, Molly's theme, and you can find more about Monk at waxboy.com. So until next time, this is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, fading to black.
Just begun. I was dead wrong. The rusted key that swings both ways never asks my name. I am here. I am. Soft, my words are floating off. Look for my sign for every light that shines.